Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 3 of The Story Crucible. I'm Eric, and I'm here today with Lila. Lila, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing? Right.
I'm doing much better. I've got a new webcam set up. I've got some other I think I've killed the Skype delay we had before. I've completely restructured some things there. If nothing else, the frame rate is a lot better than it was. So far, I'm doing good. I'm a bit exhausted. Getting all this stuff set up is more work than I initially realized, but we're good to go. I got the affiliate status on Twitch, so that's awesome. And we've got a whole slate of shows to do tonight. So you don't have a show called BattleBots in Germany, do you?
I know what it is. Okay. But I've never watched it.
You know what it is. So the announcer for the show, a guy named Farouk, he's got this like movie trailer voice. He's a really cool guy. Tim has been working to get him on the Random Chatter podcast for a few months now. And so he's going to be on tonight. So I've got to do my homework and actually, you know, come up with some good interview questions for him. We're doing that tonight. There's a big Star Wars announcement later on tonight that we're going to cover on stream in probably about 8 hours from now. So we've got more stuff just today alone, let alone all of the other stuff coming this week. So we really hit the ground running with this channel, and I need to sit down. I mean, I'm sitting down, metaphorically speaking, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So we are continuing our Star Wars coverage on the Crucible, on the Story Crucible, and we are celebrating the 40th anniversary this year of Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
Perfectly timed then.
Yes. We had the whole year to make sure we covered this episode, and we got it.
We managed it.
We're on time.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like you're trying to maybe fit in with the Hoth.
Yeah. Like I'm aware that there are no seals on Hoth, but
that we've seen.
That we've seen, exactly.
Could be.
But I also thought that in like honor of your affiliate status and your amazing Twitch channel,
I should do something. So it gives community perks as well.
Exactly.
It's not just me, but it's all of us.
You know, I think that calls for a costume.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you know, why bother to be on video? And I like that.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't. Yeah, I can go get a thicker flannel shirt since, you know, Hoth and cold.
Yeah, or a scarf.
I have a scarf. I have a hat. Would you like me to go get the hat? I can put it on.
No.
I should have done that. It's right there. I could almost reach it from here, but that would make for a boring video. So we'll skip that. But I got to say, of all the environments in Star Wars, Hoth is my favorite, partially, I think, because I like the cold and partially because I hate deserts. And at least it's not a freaking desert. I mean, this is one of the only Star Wars movies where we don't. Is it literally the only Star Wars movie that we don't have a desert? No, I don't think we had a desert in episode 3, did we? And we had kind of a barren, rocky cliff setting, but it wasn't a desert. So this is one of only 2 of the 9 Star Wars movies in the main saga where we don't have a desert. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody likes deserts.
Yeah, George. Mr. Lucas and I need to have a talk about that. Deserts are overrated. There's sand and it gets everywhere.
To be fair, like Hoth is kind of like a snow desert. I mean, it's not a desert, but there's not much more than a desert. It's just prettier because it's snow.
In episode 8, there's like a salt desert. Kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah, but still it's snow and it's fun.
It's pretty.
And it is.
It's fun. You get to die in it.
Well, yeah, it's better than dying in a desert.
Yeah, plus you get to like
at least you
warm yourself up in a nice, like disgusting animal. So.
Right. And who does not want to crawl into a tauntaun carcass?
Like that.
Yeah. So let's talk The Empire Strikes Back. I see you've got some show notes here. While I'm pulling that up, I want to remind people you can email us, storycrucible@randomchatter.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Now, the audio for the show gets distributed on the Random Chatter podcast network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. We've got a Discord server there. Which we don't have one set up for Cinefan yet. I want to grow the audience a little bit more first and make sure there's some content there. But in the meantime, you can find us at randomchatter.com/discord. That will get you in there. It's a great community there. We've got channels for each of the shows on the network, and a lot of good audience members, a lot of good conversation. It's a very welcoming place. So I highly recommend you come join us there. Instagram and Twitter, Cinefan, Cinefan. Or there's also at Random Chatter for both of those. What else is there? Like I said, we made affiliate. You can support the channel by subscribing here. And we also have a Patreon site. We've got perks for the different things. Regardless of where you subscribe, if you go to patreon.com/cinefan, all of those perks there for those tiers you will also get if you subscribe through Twitch, except the additional video and audio content. Patreon has a way to facilitate that. Twitch doesn't really. So that's an exclusive for the Patreon donors. But either way, lots of perks for people who help support the channel, and we really appreciate it. What else am I forgetting? I think that's about it. Let's jump in.
Pretty much.
You liked episode 4. You liked A New Hope.
I did.
A few little storytelling quirks, but for the most part, you liked it, right?
Yeah, I think what we talked about, I think it works as a story. Mm-hmm. I think it didn't completely capture me emotionally the way I'm used to with more modern storytelling devices.
Fair enough.
But I very much enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, it is over 40 years old, so it's, you know, it doesn't entirely surprise me that for someone who's never seen it before, it might not totally hook them today in 2020.
Yeah, but again, I expected that going into it, so I was actually positively surprised. I had a lot more fun than I thought. Yeah. Plus, also, I do think it has already rewatch value. Like, when I watched it the first time, I got some parts of it. Mm-hmm. And then at first, I was like, oh, I have to rewatch it for the show. Okay, I'm going to rewatch it. But you still get new content and new ideas and new insights into it. So I like that in movies when they have a good rewatch value.
Okay. All right. I think I killed the echo. You had some echo in your audio. It was on my end. It's not you. It's not you. It's me.
Of course it is.
Thank you to Jedi Girl in the chat for pointing that out. That was a setup issue. I eliminated the video lag and the Skype call, but I added an additional audio layer by going this other direction. And I forgot to turn the old one off. So, but it's fixed as of now, just like that. So Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. This, for most Star Wars fans, for not all, but at least my generation and typically the generation after that, I haven't really polled the newer generations, but this is most people's favorite episode. We get a little bit darker tone. We get a little bit more relationship building with Han and Leia. Luke discovers Yoda and he starts to actually learn a little bit about the Force. We've got the confrontation at the end with Vader with the big plot twist reveal.
Yes, but spoiler.
Well, it's been 40 years. I mean, I know, if you haven't caught on now, I don't know what to tell you.
I know. The thing is, I'm usually not someone who complains about spoilers ever.
Yeah.
But in this one instance, I thought, I think this would have been cooler if I hadn't known this, if this wasn't in pop culture for 40 years.
That's the problem.
And everybody knew what's
gonna happen. And it was such a big plot twist at the time that, I mean, it was mind blowing. And so now it epitomizes plot twists, and there's no way you can go into it now without knowing that. But see, here's the other thing too. As a kid watching that, when Vader reveals that, like, we didn't know whether to even believe it or not. Is it just Vader being manipulative? Like, the first thing that pops into my mind is, no, you're not. You're lying. And even Luke, he's like, no, that's not true. It can't be true. Like, you just don't believe it. And then, spoiler alert for you, because you already know that it's true because it's been in pop culture. In the next movie, George Lucas was talking about the fact that he had to have a character that the kids would trust, in this case Yoda, tell Luke, yes, that's true. So that we believe it. Because otherwise, like, a lot of kids were like, no, he's lying. He's a bad guy. Of course he's going to lie. Why wouldn't he lie? He's being manipulative.
And that would have been a good plot too. Like,
sure.
To try to, like, really confuse your enemy.
Well, yeah.
I'm your father.
Yeah.
It's a weird gambit, but an interesting one.
Yeah. Well, and then later we find Darth Vader's a robot and can't have kids. Really? And then, you know. Yeah. So there's a lot going on in this episode, and it's darker. It ends on like some horrible cliffhangers, and we didn't really have trilogies of movies back then. So that's another aspect of this. I can't think of any other series of film around 1980 where you had a part two knowing that there would be a part three and it ended on a cliffhanger. Cliffhangers were for television series. Mm-hmm. Or for the serials that George Lucas grew up with that he based Star Wars on. So I understand conceptually where the storytelling inspiration comes from. But we as audience members had never been exposed to that in feature films before.
Yeah.
So that was odd. I walked out of the movie as a kid and I'm like, I my whole world has just been destroyed. Han might be dead. Luke lost his hand. Darth Vader is his father. The bad guys want, like, what is life now?
Yeah. Sad. But yeah, I think if you're used to how series work, how especially trilogies work, yeah, that's sort of what you end up expecting. And along with a lot of other things that I really like about this movie, like I like how with A New Hope, you have a very broad view of the world and of the plot and of what's going on. It's all about saving planets and saving basically the galaxy by destroying the Death Star. And it's macro vision on everything. And I think in this one, like in many second or middle parts of series, you go very much into the macro. You go into the personal development. You go into Luke training and making his own decisions and becoming, you know, more of a self-possessed person. And you go into their own romance subplot, obviously, that I quite like. Even if it's complicated. But yeah, sort of taking a more macro view on the characters and their individual journeys is something I definitely find interesting and rewarding to watch. Yeah.
Okay. And that is the nice thing about this sequel is that we can zoom out a little bit and we don't have to have that introduction part. That's out of the way.
Yeah.
So now we can jump right into what are the characters doing? Why are they doing it? What's going on? So did you have a favorite story thread through this episode or somewhere you want to start? Where should we start the conversation?
I mean, I think my favorite, the thing that I spent most time thinking about was definitely Han and Leia, because I think that's compelling and whatever. I like a romance subplot.
Yeah.
but I'm not sure that's where we should start because it takes sort of, we could start with just going a bit chronological and starting with
Hoth.
I know you want to
start with Hoth. I want to talk about Hoth. That's my favorite place. You know, we even named one of our podcasts Echo Base because it's on Hoth, and Hoth is awesome.
I recognized that when I watched the movie.
Yeah, I would move there if I could. I lived in North Dakota for a while when I was in the military. That's about as close as I've ever gotten to Hoth, and I can't say it was a lot of fun. But then North Dakota doesn't have Tauntauns, so, you know.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do with no Tauntauns. But so, Hoth, we have the rebels are establishing a base. They're hiding from the Empire. Once again, the movie opens up with the bad guys and them hunting down the rebels. They found the rebels. They come in, and they're about to invade. Han's got to get out because he's got a price on his head. Luke and the others,
runs off and gets himself in danger for no reason except that he needs to have a vision of Obi-Wan.
Well, but no, I mean, so Luke was out scouting the perimeter. Okay, so it wasn't like he was just running off, and the vision of Obi-Wan only happened because he was near death. And
exactly.
So
that's what needed to happen. He needed to have this vision. Yeah. I get it. And I do think what I find interesting about even like the opening scenes of Luke is because last time we talked a lot about Luke being a child and having basically no maturity. And I feel like even in the opening scene, you can see that he has aged, that he has matured, that we are not immediately after the ceremony where we left after the last movie, but that he's, you know,
a little older,
a little older, a little more, he knows what he's doing. He's, you know, he's had some training as a rebel, I guess, and he feels more confident now.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Okay.
Even if then immediately he needs Han to rescue him again.
Well.
He likes, I think yeah, really,
we're getting a pattern of that.
Damsel in distress. I mean.
He is. Leia. Luke kind of is the damsel in distress, isn't he?
He is. Over and over again.
Right. Okay. So we have the thing, the Wampa, which you got the benefit of seeing the special edition version, at least. When I saw it, the only shot we really got of the Wampa was this big creature suit kind of lunging at the camera with a paw up like this. And it was like, I don't know, 10 frames of video or something. And that's it. What you got to see, you know, you got to see him like huddle around a little campfire, eating something, kind of standing up and looking off to the side. And you at least got the polished version of this. Yeah,
not that I knew this, but yes.
Right. We got the thing that like some high school kid made in his basement, like got a white rug and just kind of molded it around a thing and a big arm and swipe and cut. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be bashing it. See, that's another thing too, is the old school Star Wars fans, when the special editions came out, a lot of them were really angry. You missed that whole thing.
I completely missed it. Yeah,
you did, because they added things about A New Hope, and we didn't talk about this. We're going to back it up to A New Hope for a minute.
Okay.
This is an important thing, and I want your take on it. Mm-hmm. This has been an eternal argument by Star Wars fans for ever since the late 90s. So before the prequels came out, George Lucas used what was at the time cutting edge computer technology to make some changes to the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. Some of the changes were really good. Other changes, it kind of felt like he was just throwing additional stuff in to kind of show off that he could, especially the stuff on Mos Eisley on Tatooine, where the center where they go, Obi-Wan and Luke go to find Han and Chewbacca at the cantina. And so that was a lot smaller in scope.
Okay.
Originally. So they did some extra scenes and some extra actors in the background and additional digital effects. And that's all new. That's late 90s. The original 70s version didn't have any of that. In the cantina, when we first see Han and Greedo, that green scaly bounty hunter sits down next to him in the cantina, mm-hmm. pulls a gun on him. In the original version, Han shoots first. Greedo says, I've been waiting a long time for this, Solo. And Han says, yeah, I bet you have. Boom. George Lucas felt that portrayed Han as maybe a little too aggressive and violent.
Han? And aggressive and violent?
Well, for kids, the argument was you don't want the hero just shooting someone in cold blood.
Especially before you know why he's doing it. I understand.
Okay, fair enough. My argument is the dude's got a gun on me at point blank range. Yeah, I'm going to shoot him first. Why not? Yeah. Plus, it demonstrates that Han is at least competent at what he does. This is my argument. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the special edition, Greedo shoots first. And it's clear, like he hits the wall behind Han and then Han shoots him. So my argument is, if you're such a bad bounty hunter that you're sitting across a table from someone with a pistol, my 10-year-old son, when he was 5, having never held a gun before, could have shot Han. Like, how do you miss Han? Like,
if you're a bounty hunter, why do you want to shoot him at all?
Well, there's that too. I guess if the bounty is dead or alive, that would work.
Yeah, but why would it be dead or alive? Then you wouldn't get any money. Except if you had been the Falcon, maybe.
Because if you're Jabba the Hutt, who is hunting down Han, then at least you're demonstrating to other people that you better not cross me, or else I'll either bring you in, or if I can't, I'm going to kill you. So, you know, it could also be like a...
I never get that
maintaining trope. The status quo within the organization, so to speak.
Yeah, this sort of mafia movie thing that I never understand.
Yeah, well...
Who thinks that way? No. You still want your money.
Well, yeah, but if he doesn't have the money, then you're not getting it back anyway. I mean, you're kind of stuck one way or the other. Yeah. So They redid it in the special edition. Greedo shoots first, misses Han, Han shoots. Everybody was like, what the hell is that nonsense? You change Greedo shoots first? No, there's no way Han would have let Greedo get the drop on him. And on top of that, how do you miss? Mm-hmm. You could reach across the table, punch the guy in the face and not miss, but a gun at point blank range, and it's going to go like way up off to the corner. And it wasn't like a near miss. Like Han didn't even have to duck his head. They changed it again. Later on, George is like, okay, so we'll move the blaster bolt up closer to Han's head. Mm-hmm. And then, so that wasn't much better. So then they kind of shifted Han a little bit. So Han like ducks a little bit and shoots, but it's still like they're shooting at the same time. They changed it then so that Greedo doesn't shoot first, that they're shooting at the same time now. And then it's still like, so that's been changed like a few times. I want your take. Did it need to be changed? Is this, does it affect the storytelling? Some people argue it doesn't matter. Who cares?
I just think it's amazing that he gets to do that. Like, because as someone, I've created stories, I've written stuff, and I've done this, but not everybody gets the chance to. Like, I once had a book that was published, and then the rights were returned to me when that small publisher got,
went under.
Got bankrupt. Yeah. Yes. And then I had the chance to fix some stuff that I'd hated. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to me. So I really understand the impulse of wanting to do this.
Yeah.
And I think it's good. Yeah. Change it. Like, I also understand why people would be annoyed with this. And I've definitely heard the shoots first argument or the controversy. I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah. The whole Han shoots first thing. That's exactly what's going on. So so let me ask you this then.
To answer the other one is I understand why not to make a hero shoot first before you realize that he's a hero.
Right.
I understand the point of this. And yes, it may make him look a little incompetent, but also maybe like he just doesn't think he will shoot him because I did pay attention to that scene, but maybe not quite enough to discuss it in detail. But I did expect him to, because Han told him, hey, I'll get the money. Look, these idiots are going to pay me so much money and then you'll have it. And maybe he didn't expect him to shoot him when he promised so much money. I don't know.
He hadn't met Luke and Ben yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so see, this is a problem.
and that's fine. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot about a point that you didn't even know was an issue at the time when you were watching. And I should have brought this up last episode too, but I didn't even think about it. Because to me, it's just, we've been discussing it for 40 years and it's rare to have someone come along, especially who has certain insights as a storyteller herself that might have a certain opinion on it. So I'm curious, does it affect who Han is or is not? Again, we've had some people in our Discord server point out that it just doesn't matter. You guys are getting all worked up about something that it's not that big a deal. And to me, a lot of the changes in the special editions were either cosmetic or if they did affect things, it doesn't change the identity of any of the characters. It doesn't change the integrity of the plot. To me, and maybe not to a large extreme, but it annoys me because it kind of, again, it redefines a little bit of Han, who he is at that point, that he let someone else. I mean, Han, by all rights, should be dead because no bounty hunter should be able to miss at that range. So Han failed. He sucks. He got himself caught. He, by all rights, should have been shot right in the chest. You should have a big old hole in his chest right here. He should be gone. And then the whole universe would be suffering under the Empire because everything else would have fallen apart. So.
But. I can play devil's advocate now.
Please. Yeah.
Yes. No, but like at this point in time, from somebody who's never seen it, who doesn't know the background, who hasn't watched everything and then saw the changes.
Right.
I would say that I didn't know how serious Jabba the Hutt is, like what kind of, how intense of a person he is, how intense of a mafioso. And I didn't know how intense of a bounty hunter this person is, like, because so far, yes, you had Darth Vader like mow down the rebellion on the ship a little, but it doesn't seem I don't know. It was still kind of goofy sort of scene in the cantina, and everything was sort of, I wouldn't have expected someone to go in and immediately shoot a person, an alien, whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't get Han as incompetent from this little scene. Maybe it didn't really matter, because I didn't get any negative impression of him in that moment. And I also feel like this is something that happens in movies so much that people miss in ridiculous situations where they shouldn't miss. That I think as an audience, you're kind of used to suspending your disbelief that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what you're saying is I'm overreacting.
Yes. No.
Okay. Fair enough.
Devil's advocate.
Fair enough. No, that's exactly what I asked. And you're being honest. See, this is exactly what I want. I want people who are not afraid to disagree and tell me that I'm overreacting, even if they're wrong. It's okay. So, what were we talking about before that? Hoth?
We were talking about Hoth.
We were talking about Hoth, because Hoth is awesome. So, tell me about
a rambly show.
Tell me about your thoughts on Hoth. I want to know, was that not like a cool battle and the AT-ATs, the AT-ATs coming in?
Mm-hmm. I love how you're setting this up to make me look like an asshole. Sorry, a bad person. No, I liked Hoth as a visual.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think it's a nice visual world. Mm-hmm. But like every time, I'm going to say this every time, it's going to get so boring. I found the battle a little long for what it did in the story. Like, I feel like we already had like Luke and Han doing their thing, and then they just got rescued, and then you have another battle. And
yeah,
it wasn't the thing I was most interested in the story. although I understand that you needed to raise the stakes and you needed to split up the groups.
Right.
And it did all of those things.
Mm-hmm. So it did have a storytelling purpose.
Yeah, definitely.
I understand your point about it being a little bit long, though. Like, to me, it doesn't feel that way. But when I was watching it with my son, which I recently took him through all of the movies except episode 9, mm-hmm. it gave me a different perspective, because as we're sitting there watching it, I had him try to watch when he was 5 years old. Because I thought, okay, he's old enough now, you know, 4 is too young, 5 was actually too young as well. But I thought, you know, the sooner the better, because he's going to be a Star Wars fan like his dad, right? This is going to be awesome. We're going to be able to bond over it. And he's watching the first one. And he's like, Dan, there's a lot of talking in this movie. I'm like, oh no, I've lost him already. What? So yeah, now this is when he's like 5 and a half or so. Yeah, okay. So, you know. And, you know, he's used to YouTube videos and whatever. I don't even think he was watching YouTube at that point, but like he's used to like things with faster cuts and not as much dialogue. Right. So now that he's older, he finally expressed some interest in maybe going back and rewatching these. And so we got to Empire Strikes Back and the other movies. And I kept thinking, okay, is this going too slow for him? Because that was an issue before. So now I'm self-conscious about it. Yeah. And I realized that, yeah, the Hoth battle, it does go on a little bit long. And I don't mind it, but then I grew up with it too. So
and it's, I'll give you that. I mean, that's already like a difficult, I always hate like watching movies with someone and I really love the movie and they don't know it yet. And then I sit there like, are they thinking it's okay? Are they bored?
Right.
It's going well. I hate it. It's so, it's not fun. But for me, it's like, again, this issue of watching something on a computer screen versus watching something in the movies. And I'm already not like the biggest action scene fan, especially if they drag on.
You are the least action scene fan person I've ever met.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like them.
Yeah.
I'm okay with them, but I will always say I'd like more dialogue than action scenes.
That's fair. That's, I mean,
yeah.
It's a lot of action scenes are there to get an emotional response and adrenaline going. It's not as much story development, and there are action scenes with story development even in this movie, in my opinion, but it's hard to really get that in a good action scene to write an action scene that, in fact, I've seen scripts where it's like insert battle here in the script.
Wow.
Like, it just anyway, but
yeah,
so Hoth was long.
Yeah. And then I kept thinking, like, why are these vehicles that the Empire have so unwieldy? And why does the Rebellion have flying things and they have these things. And
because it was intimidating. Why? And it was.
Is it?
Yeah, they can just go through and like plow through a whole village and stomp everybody to the ground. And I mean, what are you going to do? You can shoot at them and they don't, they're slow, but they're
topple them
indestructible. Nobody else has ever figured out to topple them.
I didn't know that. It just sounded like a
assuming good that. I mean, they made it up as they went along, basically. And keep in mind that the rebellion is fighting back against these things, but the Empire in general is not used to people fighting back against them. And if they do, I mean, they go and they take over a world and they drop the military down on this planet. The planet's defenses, they don't have any way to really fight back against this sort of thing. So, like, if you've got a small village and these Imperial walkers are coming through, what are you going to do? Throw rocks at it? Doesn't matter how slow it is. It's going to come in and raise the whole area. Burn everything to the ground, crush the buildings under its feet, literally and metaphorically. Mm-hmm. One of those things could destroy a whole town.
Yeah.
And
I get that.
Why ground vehicles instead of like air vehicles? That's another question I've heard. I don't know the answer to that. I'm guessing maybe the fuel for those is cheaper, the maintenance or something. I don't know. There's probably some logistical reason why it makes sense.
Of course, it has to be a really logistical and legit reason other than just it looked cool. Or
is there a reason? Yes, there's a reason. I have no idea what it is, but I promise you there's a reason. Just trust me.
There has to be.
There has to be. Yeah.
Did you do the force on me right now? Just trust me.
I did. Just, these are not the excuses you're looking for.
Very good. Okay. But yeah, I'm not that nitpicky on everything. Like, but that's the thing. Like, but I'm bored. I suddenly get nitpicky, and then I start thinking about like, why is it like that, and why are they so unwieldy, and another thing. So yeah, it's.
So we need to make sure that you don't get bored in movies.
Yes, we should.
I can understand that. I had the same thing happen with the Fast and Furious 9 trailer the other day.
God, right?
You want to talk about, I don't mind action scenes. And even like that was too like boring action-y over the top for me. I'm sitting there thinking about the physics of drop kicking someone. We talked about this in Trailer Breakdown this week. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're going on with these action scenes and stuff. And it was exactly that experience you just described. I felt bored. So I'm starting to like pick apart these other things. And I'm like, that's not how physics work. If you jump up there, you kick at someone, you're also going backwards, which means you're not kicking them as hard because that kinetic energy is being distributed in both an action and an opposite reaction. It's the whole, Newton's law or whatever physics rule it is. And in the meantime, we've got cars jumping off of a cliff and getting hooked on part of this broken bridge and using it as a grappling hook and swinging through the air. And I'm like, that kick doesn't work.
Yeah.
Your mind starts going off and picking things apart, and it's never good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there is a term for this in theater. I think Bertolt Brecht sort of came up with it.
Okay.
And it's sort of like, I forgot what it's called, but it's this idea that in theater, when you do political theater, you shouldn't really be that emotionally engaged that you are too into the story and forget the message, that you forget to think about it. And so he created this device to basically disturb people or disrupt people from getting too engrossed in the narrative. And for me, that's what action scenes are a lot of the time. So they just rip me out of the narrative if they're too long, especially because I agree when they're short and good.
Yeah.
They raise adrenaline and they make things exciting. But when they just drag on, I lose what was going on. I'm just emotionally out and then whatever.
Yeah.
But I also understand that, like you said, I'm more intense about this than most people. So I'm fine with watching a little bit more action that I like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So if nothing else, you do point out, so we've got two things that happen as a result of the Battle of Hoth. Mm-hmm. One is that the bad guys, you get to wear the hat, and it's a cute hat. I mean, let's face it. I feel underdressed now. So the one is the bad guys win. Mm-hmm. And from a storytelling point of view, that's a little bit important. Like you said, it raises the stakes a little bit.
I mean, that's why I didn't get, do they actually win? I thought most people got away.
Well, they get away, but it's not like the good guys really beat them. The bad guys won. They discovered the base. They took over the base.
Yeah.
And the good guys retreated, but that still counts as a lost battle, right? If you retreat. So you can argue that the bad guys won. And then the other thing is, like you said, it separated the characters. They're going off into different directions now.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about them. That's more interesting than the battle.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk more about the battle.
No.
Let's start with Luke.
Okay. Let's start with Luke.
Because I feel like, especially when we talked about Luke in The New Hope, like I said, we talked a lot about how he's very much a boy and he didn't have much of a story, like a personality arc, like a development in his personality. And also we talked a lot about how a lot of the character are kind of ancient archetypes or story archetypes, like, you know, the damsel in distress, the rogue, the chosen one. And I feel like what they did in this case is, instead of going with a character-driven idea where we see Luke actually evolve and mature on his own, we see that at the end of A New Hope, Luke basically completes a manhood ritual, right? He destroys the Death Star. He does something amazing that he shouldn't be able to do at his age, or, like, you know, that confirms that he is now a man in this sort of ancient idea of what.
Right. The coming of age. And
I mean, it does remind me of, like, hunter gatherer things where, like, the boy does his first kill and then he is celebrated by his village, and then he's a man, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. and he gets a medal, and
And then when we see him again, he is kind of a man. I mean, he still has this sort of angelic baby face, and because he is still the damsel, so that fits. And there's a scene where when he's saved from almost dying, where he's in this tank, and he almost looks like he has nappies on.
The Bacta tank, the diaper tank, as some people. Yeah.
But apart from this,
Mark Hamill almost died in that tank, by the way.
Really?
So what happened is, just before he went to get in it, the lighting rig above the tank fell and the lights fell into the water and electrocuted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he wasn't in there. He was just
not yet.
In. Yeah.
So props to Mark Hamill for having them clear that out, fix it, and then say, okay, get in now. So I'd be like, hell no. Yeah. Put in a mannequin or something. I ain't doing that. But no, he did it. And I don't know.
To be fair, it was probably safer then. Like, they get into something right after it happened.
Yeah, I'm sure that they got their act together after that. I'd like to think so anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, so apart from that, I think we see a lot of Luke just being more adult and more of a man, both as, like, somebody who seems like a somewhat seasoned rebel or military person. I actually feel like a lot of this is an interesting depiction of rebellion, because I feel like in today's storytelling, when we hear rebellion, we think of something far less organized and far less militaristic.
True.
But yeah, it is. Like a rebellion soldier. And I feel like one scene that I really liked, it's a really short scene where he basically says goodbye to Han, and he knows Han wants to leave. And in A New Hope, he gets pouty about that. You know, he gets angry in this childish way and goes, like, why can't you do that? And in this moment, he's like, yeah, okay. And he smiles and he wishes him well, which I think is a much more mature and adult thing to do.
Right.
And sort of nice counterpoint between how much he changed in that time, which I find really interesting. And then he just runs off to get his training without telling anyone. Why doesn't he tell anyone? Is it just so secret? But wouldn't they worry?
If I told someone that when I died, a little shriveled up green elf who spoke badly came to me in a vision. Well, no, actually, it was Obi-Wan. Yeah, so to be fair, it wasn't Yoda. Though in the original storyboards, there was a Yoda on Hoth that Luke was going to run into. But yeah, so I had a vision of, do you remember that guy who died when we were escaping the thing? Right. Yeah. So he came to me and told me to go to this planet. That's a swamp, and it's like way out in the middle of nowhere. But he said, I have to go there and train with a Jedi master. I know, the Jedi are all dead, but I have to go there and find a Jedi master on this swamp planet that you probably haven't even heard of because it's so way out there. Yeah. So I'm going to head out there. You guys just go on. I'll catch up later.
Okay.
That would make me worry.
I get you.
You know, not all there up here.
Yeah. So yeah, he runs off to be trained. And again, like I think it again mirrors something from the New Hope, what we talked about how Luke doesn't actually make any decisions by himself. He's pushed into decisions.
Right.
And here he makes his own decisions. Like, yes, Obi-Wan tells him in a vision, but he makes his own decisions. Again, I think that's a lot of development for Luke in this time. That is interesting to see.
I mean, I guess he could have said no.
He could have said no to his vision. Yeah.
I don't know that would have been smart, but
yeah,
he could have.
He could have. Exactly. He could have. And he takes his own actions to facilitate this. He does. He runs off.
Yeah.
He basically runs away. He goes AWOL.
Later, after you've seen episodes 1, 2, and 3, and I think you'll like Star Wars by the end of the day, but I don't know that you're going to like it enough to go back and watch like the Clone Wars animated television series and stuff and things like that. But the more exposure you get to Yoda, I want you to someday come back and rewatch this scene with the introduction of Yoda, because Yoda is like the one character who's on top of everything through the prequels and through the Clone Wars. There were 6 seasons of the Clone Wars animated series. And I'll explain what it covers later when we get to that. And then right now they're releasing a 7th season on the Disney Plus streaming service. Yoda is present through on and off throughout that series as well. And then we get introduced to him here and he's insane.
Yes. Especially because I told you, I've seen The Phantom Menace, right? And so I had a certain expectation
of who
Yoda is.
That's true. I forgot that you had seen that. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously it was a long time ago, but I still had a pretty, an impression of who Yoda is.
Oh, sure.
Like, what? Apart from it being a way more obvious costume rather than probably an animation, right?
In The Phantom Menace, at the time it came out, it was all... No, there was
no idea.
Puppet version of Yoda initially, and then they replaced it later with CG.
Yeah, but anyway, it looks far more ridiculous, not as cute.
Yeah,
as cute. Later Yoda or earlier Yoda.
Yoda's not cute.
What?
Yoda's not cute. He's a shriveled little elf. He's a frog with big ears.
Okay, I'm sorry. When I was a teenager and watched Phantom Menace, I thought he was adorable. Yeah, what? I think so.
I'm one of the only people in the world who don't have this fascination with Yoda. I get it, but I don't get it. I don't know.
Yeah. I have to admit, I didn't get it in this one. Like, I understand that it's sort of this archetype of the crazy sage, the one that you don't understand how brilliant he is because he's way above you. And so.
Right. He's hit a level of enlightenment.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what Yoda's supposed
to be. Like, it's still weird when he just starts hitting something with a stick or getting into R2. It's a bit difficult to see as a first time watcher. Okay.
Yeah.
Is this funny? Is this cute? What's the intention here? I thought it was a bit overdone.
You need to watch. When we're done here, I'm going to send you a couple of YouTube videos.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a bad lip reading?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. We're going to talk. The audience out there, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? So there was another video. They did another music video recently called My Stick with Yoda. If you haven't seen it yet, cause you didn't know it came out. I think it came out back in December. Go check it out. It's
okay.
I'll show you here in a few minutes. You're going to love it. You're going to hate it, but you're going to, anyway. So Yoda is, but I think that's a little bit also Yoda kind of trying to get a feel for Luke too, right? Because it's easy for someone to say, I want to become this powerful ninja wizard, swordsman, everything, ultimate fighter. Iron Man missile launcher. Like, I want all of it. And you, right. And you come find the guy who can just hand it to you.
Yeah.
And Yoda, well, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a bit much for, like, again, just, I think mainly because I've seen The Phantom Menace and it was so different.
That's going to affect that, I think. Because, yeah, it, so, again, that's another plot twist, too, is that when you're watching it for the first time, and I do remember this as a kid, you think that he's just some little alien, you know, a little hunchback administrative assistant who's then going to take Luke to the Grand Master, who's going to be in this mud hut up on a hill overlooking the swamp or something. Like, you have no... Because, again, the whole size doesn't matter thing. You look at him, and he's this diminutive little frog.
Weirdo. Yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, he's not the Jedi Master. Plus, he's not human. And only humans can be heroes, even in sci-fi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that's another trope that gets broken. So, I get what you're saying, that maybe it felt like a little bit over the top. But I think that, unfortunately, that might be clouded by the fact that you did see him in Phantom Menace.
I think so. Like, I do think that they're, especially in this one, more than in The New Hope, that what you know about the verse and what you know about what is going to happen, that did affect my viewing of it a lot more. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but can't be helped, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it.
It did remind me a lot about a video game plot that I think must have stolen it from Star Wars, because, like...
Okay.
I've played a lot of Secret of Mana on Super Nintendo when I was a kid.
Okay, I've heard of it.
This exact thing. There's this group of adventurers who need to find a sage, and then they go to the sage's cave, and there's a weirdo who keeps sending them on ridiculous quests and acting ridiculous. And in the end, it turns out that was the sage all along. So,
and they ripped off Star Wars, probably.
They ripped off Star Wars.
Yeah.
There's also an empire in this, so I think they very clearly ripped off Empire.
See? There have been a lot of things that have ripped. You've heard of Battlestar Galactica?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a Star Wars ripoff. Lucasfilm actually sued them, and I think won most of the complaints they filed against them. But once Star Wars hit, there were a lot of things that ripped Star Wars off, because it was new, it was groundbreaking, and we'd never seen anything like it at the time. And these days, there's nothing but this kind of content.
Yeah.
That's
how many people have ripped off Tolkien?
Amazing. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think Dungeons and Dragons would exist without Tolkien. I'm not saying it's a direct ripoff, but, like, just if nothing else, the interest in that sort of thing. I mean, the elves and the trolls and the, you know, the halflings / hobbits, that just, it wasn't a thing before Tolkien.
Yeah.
So, but that's another thing that people lose sight of, especially younger people, is that back when Star Wars came out, this was the option for space fantasy. It's not even, I mean, now we're a little more careful in our labels, and we say, well, Star Wars isn't really science fiction. It's space. It's a space opera. It's fantasy in a sci-fi setting. Star Trek is science fiction. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is space fantasy. And that's fine. It really is.
In the umbrella of science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Speculative fiction.
But back then, we had Star Trek on television and a movie that did okay. And we had Star Wars, and that was basically it. Nobody else was doing this back then, and especially something that was kid-friendly.
Yeah.
So for a whole generation, and it was a long time before we got to the point where there was any legitimate competition to Star Wars. And then these days... You could probably look at just the last 6 months worth of offerings and find things that would appeal to that same demographic really easily. And half of it would be on television. Television back then, totally different creature than it is today.
I do think we have so much, like, especially sci-fi content now. Like,
yeah.
I still feel like we don't have enough fantasy content, especially in video form. Like,
well, yeah.
I think that's still rare, and it's still something that I have to jump on, even though it's not perfect. Like, with The Witcher, for instance, I was just happy to see some fantasy, even though I definitely think that had problems. But you really don't have to look far to find sci-fi content.
Everything has problems, though. So
yeah, it does.
Really, you have to look at the good versus the bad, and what can you get out of it that's good And
do you enjoy it or not?
Right.
At the end.
And then
day.
With the bad stuff, you try to mitigate it, and you try to find things where the bad things don't happen to be things that bother you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you do the best you can. But I think that one of the reasons why people from my generation and the generation after me are so obsessed with particular franchises is because there was one option.
Yeah.
My son doesn't have that same kind of brand loyalty because he has so many different options. He's a myriad of things that, and he does have loyalty, but it's fleeting. He'll jump from one thing to another, to another. He's kind of into the Marvel thing now, and that seems to have solidified. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, there are so many things vying for his attention.
Yeah.
We didn't have that when I was growing up. So I think that's one of the reasons this is such a big deal.
Yeah. I definitely agree.
Okay. So.
But yeah, Yoda.
Yoda. Let's talk a little bit more about Yoda. I know we're running a little bit long here, but it's okay. Let's talk Yoda.
Distracted. I actually talked to other friends about this who much preferred this version of Yoda to the Phantom Menace Yoda. And I think he should be like this and he should be this weird. But again, I think it depends on what you've seen first. And I found it momentarily a little bit like, what? What is this? But then you get into sort of this archetypal idea of Luke training his powers. Mm-hmm. And you have this iconic idea of there is no try, which I think is actually pretty deep when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing that.
There are a lot of things about that whole scene that had some philosophical depth that we hadn't really seen in science fiction at that point, and then hadn't seen for many, many years afterwards. I mean, when you think about sci-fi movies that have a little bit more philosophy to them, you think The Matrix, a lot of us would argue Blade Runner. Like that, but there aren't that many things. And here we've got this almost a pseudo religion presented in Star Wars.
A lot in almost all sci-fi books that I've read, which is why
that's
sci-fi
different.
Book form. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But then, right.
Yeah. It's less common, I guess. Yeah. In video sci-fi.
Yeah. So you've got the do or do not, there is no try. You've got the, you know, I don't believe it, and that is why you fail. You've got the size matters not. And it's not really a theology, it's a philosophy, but it presents this deeper level to the quote magic that we see the characters using in Star Wars, which is, I think that's kind of cool. And we're going to come back around to that later when we hit the Phantom Menace, because it was a concept introduced there with the midichlorians. I bring that up now because you say you've seen Phantom Menace.
I have, but the names escape me.
And that's good, because that's another one of those things where I think new people to Star Wars just don't care, and the veteran people get really wrapped up in something like that. That's another thing in the chat room. Fetmatic says, luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. And that's another important philosophical point, is that we are more than just our corporeal form or our body. We have a soul of some sort. And however that ends up being defined, it's still a part of us. And we are still that, not just the flesh. So there are a lot of concepts introduced there.
And it helps to establish what the Force sort of is as a magic system without that much effort, really. It's really fast, and you get an idea. Yeah, I understand this magic system. I understand it's kind of based in some Eastern idea that's a bit like meditation, or like, not really, but you know what I mean. This sort of, it has some concepts that you can grab onto and feel like this, it might be real. It feels believable.
There are analogies or parallels to a lot of different theological beliefs, a lot of different religions that are not duplicated with the Force, but they're influenced. I think the Force has influences from all of these different religious beliefs, and it kind of, it's a zoomed out, superficial look at religious perspectives in general. It's hard to really quantify, and we could dive into that at some point, but
Like, and I may go way out on a limb here, but it does remind me a little bit of like the 60s, 70s sort of vibe.
Yeah.
In sort of how some sort of
existentialism.
Yeah, were introduced right. into like mainstream culture, or like at least mm-hmm. counterculture. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. So overall, before we move on, Yoda, Dagobah, that scene worked for the storytelling, didn't work?
It did. Like it. Okay. I didn't so much like the first scene with him, but as it went on, mm-hmm. I really liked it. I think it was an interesting thing. And then, yeah, we get more of Luke making his own decisions, which right. I like. I like seeing him make his own decisions. Mm-hmm. Because Yoda basically said that if he leaves, if he wants to save Han and Leia, he will destroy everything they fight for.
Right.
And I don't feel like that is what happened, or at least not yet. And that surprised me because I thought that Yoda would actually know this. Like, if Yoda would say this, then it would be true. And it wouldn't be like an option. And if Luke does the right thing, it won't happen.
So this is one of those situations where it's interesting because Luke has agency and he makes the decision, and it is the wrong decision, but it ends up being the correct decision. Like, it's not the decision he should have made, but it coincidentally ended up working out okay. And
pretty much, yeah.
And so, and then that kind of breaks down the whole,
well,
Yoda's insightful, but not all powerful. Like, he's not omniscient.
Yeah.
And so it brings some humanity, if you will, to Yoda as well. And it's still, Yoda's talking about the risk inherent, and we don't really know how powerful Vader is until we see the prequels. And now we understand, Luke doesn't have a chance against this guy. If he goes there now before he's really trained, and he's, even just the philosophical concepts that Yoda's presenting, Luke's not really entirely getting yet.
Yeah.
Then he's going to go and he's going to get his butt kicked, which he goes and he gets his butt kicked.
He does get,
And again, he survives by coincidence. He loses that battle too, and he just barely survives. And everything could have been put in jeopardy, all because Luke, once again, was still being impulsive.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. But at the same time, this is also a thing that I personally didn't feel completely informed about what the light side is and what the dark side is. And then he has to make this decision, which he also makes basically out of shock and pride. And he doesn't make an informed decision, because he can't make an informed decision because he doesn't have enough information on what really the dark side is versus the light side, especially when Vader says they can get rid of the Emperor.
Right. Because Vader makes a compelling argument.
Yeah, because Luke, I don't think, has any reason to know how Darth Vader would act without the Emperor. If Darth Vader, for example, would have destroyed Leia's planet without orders from the Emperor, how would he know this?
Right.
He could just think, obviously he's a scary dude with a black mask on his face, which just revealed that he's his father.
Right.
But I think overall, he doesn't really know what the difference is between the light side and the dark side.
Yeah.
He knows what the difference is between the rebellion and the Emperor, but
yeah. Yeah. And even if he has an idea, there's a difference between understanding the concept of something and fully grasping the gravity of it and the consequences and the ins and outs. Yeah. And he's definitely not there yet. I want to come back to Luke and Vader and that confrontation later on, but let's hop over to Han and Leia.
Okay, we don't do this last. Okay, cool. Let's hop over to Han.
I want to close out the Vader thing with Luke last, just because it is kind of the crux of.
It's true.
It's where everything leads up to. And to be fair, the Han and Leia thing, that's the B plot in this movie.
Whether
you want it to be or not, it is. We'll save the gold for the end. But so, having seen The Empire Strikes Back for the first time, and I know you've rewatched it one more time in preparation for this show. Tell me about Han and Leia, because I know you're going to have some opinions on this one.
Yeah. Okay. After first watching it, I really, really hated Han a lot. I really didn't like
him. Why?
Because he felt to me like a man who is intimidated by the fact that the woman has power and is self-possessed and is not someone who just sees herself as a romantic object, Because she doesn't. She sees herself as a military leader. She sees herself as a person, as a full person.
And she is both.
She is, exactly. Yeah. But and what he then does, because he can't deal with this, is over and over again reducing her to a romantic object. Like, he never treats her, you know, according to who she is. He always tries to kind of diminish her into, oh, I know you're into me. You just can't help yourself. You're so into me. And like, stop it. He's never nice to her. He never sort of makes her feel like she's doing a good job in her job. And that annoyed me a lot at first. Like, he could have, I feel like someone who's more secure in themselves could have given her an inch more.
But I think that that does communicate that maybe he's not fully secure in himself, though.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's sort of something when I watched the second time, mm-hmm. I still feel like a lot of this, you know, applies. I still found it a bit hard to watch, but I got deeper into his motivation somehow. And I sort of thought about it. And basically the impression I get from Leia is that she isn't just a self-possessed person and a military leader. She's basically his superior, his Aunt Luke's superior. At least she commands the pilots. So mm-hmm. I'm guessing they took orders from her. And mm-hmm. there is a hierarchy, a very clear hierarchy, and that makes any romance really complicated. Already makes it complicated. And at the same time, again, this is just me going off almost nothing but this movie, but it seems very different from, say, Star Trek Voyager, where it seems pretty normal that women are in leadership and nobody questioned this and nobody has a problem with it. It's just kind of expected and it's not questioned at all. And here, you don't really see a lot of women around.
No.
You just basically see Leia. She's the only one.
And it's funny because there are a lot of perspectives on that. Some people criticizing the series for not having more females and others praising the series for having a female that has a lot of agency, is in a leadership position at a time when movies didn't have women in those roles. So there's arguments back and forth from both aspects of that. But you'll see in the next movie, again, I hate spoiling things, but because you're bringing it up, it's hard to not mention some things. Mm-hmm. We discover Leia's not the top of the hierarchy.
Not the top, sure. But
and there is another woman in charge, but then, like, that's basically two women out of an entire trilogy. That are in charge, but that just exist at all. Like, there's
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I we could talk about this as a movie trope, but I think especially that's not really that fair to do, given the time that it was in. I would if it was now. If it was now, I'd definitely question this. But yeah, I think it was okay. But it made me think that this may not be so normal for Luke, or especially for Han, to be commanded by a woman, especially a woman that in the first movie he definitely had a connection with because they had an adventure together.
Right.
Him and Luke. So they formed a bond, and then they were suddenly thrust into a different situation where he was her inferior, basically, or, you know, he was very much for her to command.
Han doesn't like being anybody's inferior.
Yes, exactly.
So,
and then there's this first scene, you know, where he singles her out to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. And he sort of makes her special among everybody else in the Rebels because he goes to her to say goodbye. And then she doesn't make him special in return. She treats him like, mm-hmm. just another soldier that she doesn't want to lose because he's just another soldier. And from then on out, it's like his pride rears up and he gets so mean about it. And then he just acts like an asshole for a while. Mm-hmm. I understand that his pride was hurt by this moment where he tried to show a little bit of vulnerability and single her out. And she didn't return this. And she just kept, you know, not even in a romantic way, but she kept even sort of denying that there's a friendship there and there's any sort of personal reason she wants him to stay.
Which, again, is something we didn't see from female characters in movies at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I think that's part of the reason why I was a bit annoyed at the Hoth battle, because I thought that this is such an interesting dynamic to have, like, especially in that time, a romance between a woman who is higher up the food chain than the man. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. But the only thing we sort of get is his hurt pride over and over again. And he hides himself between like a million layers of sarcasm. Like he's basically an actor playing an actor, an actor, an actor. You know, he's like, he goes right. so deep into sarcasm to like hide any feeling he might have, which again is understandable. Everybody yeah. does it to some degree. I mean, I do it right now because I'm on camera, but he does it in a sort of annoying way. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I like Han.
I do. But... That's the thing. Like, that's the thing. After I thought about it a lot and mm-hmm. second time watching, I liked Han. I just understand that he has flaws and that's sort of what makes him likable. And it's also... I mean, like other tropes come up, like especially it's later on, but like when they are finally off alone together and the hierarchies mm-hmm. sort of crumble away and they can be alone and it's not, she's, you know, there isn't this gulf between them anymore. Right. I think there's a reason why that's when the romance starts up again.
Yeah.
Because that's when they can because have romance.
Well, and there are times in the movie where he's not being fake to her. And those are the moments where she warms up to him.
Yeah, exactly.
But all of the rest of the time, he's putting on this facade, and which is interesting because it's so obvious that he's doing it yeah. because yeah. he has vulnerabilities and there's no way he's going to let those be seen.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and at the same time, they are. They're so obvious because he's... his mask right. is so obvious.
Well, and they're obvious to us as the audience... which is what makes it. So I guess to me, these obnoxious moments from him, mm-hmm. they're so obviously coping mechanisms
yeah.
that I never see him as a jerk. I see him as someone who's insecure.
He is, but you know, you can be insecure and a jerk at the same time.
Well, you can.
I mean, you can be a jerk about being insecure.
You're responsible for your own actions. And if you act yeah. like a jerk, the reasons don't jerk. Matter much. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a really yeah. important point.
But I also understand that he is showing vulnerability by being a jerk.
Right, or hiding vulnerability.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can see that there's vulnerability there, and he's not just, like, a mean, cruel person. It's just that he's scared of yeah. that being seen. And
yeah, especially by someone like Leia. Who does, I think, intimidate him.
Who has power and has authority, yeah. and he doesn't want to be seen as inconsequential by her. But you can argue that while there are a lot of ways in which he demonstrates that she doesn't matter to him on anything more than a superficial level, I think that she matters to him on a meaningful level more than we give that credit for, because otherwise he wouldn't be so desperately seeking her approval.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's just that he wants that trophy. I think it's that he doesn't want to be seen as inconsequential by someone who actually has agency and power and meaning, and he doesn't want to lack meaning himself.
Yeah.
Now, like, it could be the other.
Today,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think even today, like, imagine this. If this is like, say, I mean, we don't actually have princesses.
Right.
In Britain, maybe. But say, like, someone from a political family, say, like, Obama's daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she meets some guy who is basically a grifter somewhere hunted by the mafia. And he somehow has to feel, like, you do need a sense of balance in a relationship, right? And you,
yeah.
how do you do that? So you, if you can't have that balance, you need to throw in a lot of, yeah, stuff to... compensate for this. So I get it.
And it's hard to tell whether it really is, like, maybe he does just want her as a trophy. He sees that she has power and everything, and he wants to say, yeah, I'm dating that. And then gets frustrated when he can't attain it. I get that there's the challenge of the hunt, so to speak. I just don't think it's that.
Yeah. I don't think it's that either now that I've watched it, mainly because, I mean, okay, she is the only girl around, so who else is he going to hunt? But I think if it's just the hunt for someone, I think you would go for someone less complicated.
Yeah, I think there's that. And we're seeing ways in which he is becoming more altruistic as he goes along, and he is starting to become a hero. He's still participating in all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think he is genuinely trying to find meaning in himself, regardless of Leia factoring in. I think he's, you know, he's on the run. He's messed up. The whole underground thing didn't work out for him, and that's still kind of who he is. But I think he realizes that he needs to be more than that. He needs to be fulfilled, and he hasn't been fulfilled like on his own. And so I think he's trying to find meaning. And I think that he feels like if she shuns him away, it's proof that he doesn't mean anything. And I think that he feels like he probably doesn't mean very much. And he's seeing all of these other heroes around him, and he doesn't want to walk away being meaningless.
Yeah. And clearly, I mean, especially in this movie, you see him also caring for Luke, and you see that he cares and that he wants to be a person who could just be this innocent, I think. I think he kind of wishes that he could be this clear-cut hero in a way, but he still has his problems, so he needs to fix those. And he's always torn. Yeah. And then with Leia, I do think that she rubs up against every insecurity he has. And that makes people act out in strange ways, even in like tropes like he holding on to her even though she says no, which I would call out in today's movie also, but if it's, you know, I'm gonna ignore
it's,
that one.
I mean, listen, it's, is it appropriate? No, obviously it's not, but it's 2020 and I'm saying this in 2000, in 1990, in 1980, there's a different perspective on this. And for the culture at the time, she stood up to him. She's like, no, she's like, no, get your hands off of me. And there was never a point where I felt like she portrayed herself as being victimized.
Yes, I agree. It's one more extension of him not understanding how to deal with this.
Yeah.
How to tell her what he needs to tell her. He can't. And I understand why. I couldn't either. Like in that situation, it's very difficult. And I think there's this moment before they kiss, the kiss, where he still plays a role when he says, you could be a bit nicer to me, you know, and it's still sort of a role, but it's a softer role. He's trying, you know, he's definitely trying to not be this, you know,
and that's the thing that line is so much about, hey, I'm trying here and I don't, it's not working and I don't understand. So like, cut me some slack. I'm doing my best here.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really, I think that I never really paid attention to that line before, but now that you bring it up, I think that says more than I realized it did about where he's coming from. It's like, oh, come on, just cut me some slack. I'm trying to be charming. I'm trying to connect. And it's like, you just keep, I mean, you don't have to be so mean.
Yeah.
But it
because
shows.
Kind of is. And because he, they well, play this off each other.
Kind of. I mean, I can't blame her for it either because, I mean, I don't know that jerk at that point in the story is true. Like earlier, maybe at that point, I think, you know, it's a little different, but I don't know. I guess I never looked at it that way before. So now what about when they get to Cloud City?
Yes.
Because the dynamics changed a little bit by then.
Yeah. Because, then Lando shows up and I haven't paid that much attention to that part. I haven't any notes on that part. I don't know.
No, you were studying the whole Trapped in the Falcon
part
of it.
I like that part.
So the dynamic, it did change a little bit. And they get into a point where they get there. Han is a little bit on edge. Leia's like, you know. Yeah. It's almost like when you're on a long car trip and you get to your destination, you're there, you're happy, you're there, but my gosh, you just want to rest. You just want to like, I'm done. I'm done with all of this. Give me some food. Give me something to drink. Give me a bedroom. I'm going to bed. Wake me up tomorrow. And it just kind of felt like, okay, they finally found some safety and they can take a breath. Han is still a little bit on edge.
Yeah, and Leia too. I mean, even like that first scene where mm-hmm. he greets Lando, and they have this little fake thing.
Yeah, where the charming
that,
thing.
Yeah, it's not really. Yeah, exactly. Where you can tell that Han is scared. Like, he is on edge.
Right.
And then Leia doesn't trust Lando either, and they're back to being not alone, which means they can't be, you know, Han and Leia.
Right.
In the same way that they just were, even though we barely got to see them.
But anyway. Also, we get to a point now where Han is a little bit more truthful, I guess, with how he communicates with Leia. He's more genuine.
Yeah,
I agree. And again, I think Leia responds to that. Leia's a politician. She comes from a politician's family. I mean, yes, she's a military leader now, but she understands politics. Yeah. She understands when you're not being genuine about who you are, what you're representing, what you're saying. And I think that's why the whole Lando thing with her just kind of, you know, slides right off her back. She's like, oh, yeah, you're charming. I get it. You're like everybody else I've ever dealt with who's charming. Mm-hmm. But now with Han being genuine with her, she responds to that a little bit better. And they're both in a situation where they're both seeking refuge. They're both on the run. They've got some shared interest there. And I think that they're working a little bit more as a team at that point in the story, which was nice to see. Like we've, in those two acts, in Act 2 and in Act 3, we get to see the building of some actual camaraderie between them.
Yeah. Camaraderie. No, sorry. Yes,
well,
but yes,
and romance that, too, but then there's not a lot of romance on Cloud City because of the circumstances, but they're also no longer at each other's throats either. Like they're getting along, they're, you know, and then we get the moment where Han is being used as bait. He's lowered into the carbonite freezing chamber. You've got that scene.
Yeah. The other iconic dialogue piece.
Yes.
Yes.
Which again, you had so spoiled for you, it probably robbed you of any drama in the moment.
I thought he would say it so differently. I was still kind of surprised because I didn't think he said it in a really cool way. I thought he would say it like in an arrogant, cool way, but he didn't. He said it.
Which is what made it work because truth.
It was kind of vulnerable. Like,
yes,
I know. And this sucks. I'm sorry. It was basically, I'm sorry.
And I'm glad they didn't go with, I love you too, because that's so token. Yeah. When I tell someone that I love them and I want them to really understand what I'm telling them, hearing I know makes me feel good because I, you know, whether it's a romantic relationship or a family member or whatever, I'm telling them I love them because I want them to know that they're loved. And if they tell me I know that, that means I've succeeded. They get it. And like, we're good. What I was trying to communicate has been successfully communicated. We're good. The whole, I love you too thing. Like I do that with people and there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm glad that we saw that moment where Han's like, yeah, after all this struggle and after like everything else that happened up to this point where things got real, I didn't know it before. I didn't think it would ever happen. And now like, I know.
Yeah.
We're there. And, and so that was like, I like that. And again, those could be his last words at this point. We don't know in the series, what's going to happen after that.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this also, I don't know if you talked about it on air, but that the acting is different than we would do acting today, maybe.
Well, yeah.
And I feel like, I feel like there wouldn't have been enough impact if you also said, I love you too. It would just be kind of cheesy. Mm-hmm.
And predictable, if nothing else.
And predictable. And also, like, they are in front of, like, their mortal enemies. And I don't feel like Han would say this in front of everybody. Like, he would say it maybe in private when they're alone.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I feel like what he tried to communicate was communicated. And, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right. Well, I know we're running a little bit long, but, I mean, this is The Empire Strikes Back. This is, like, the movie for a lot of the Star Wars fans. So I want to make sure we really hit all of the major points. Luke and Vader, we get to the confrontation at the end. Luke falls for the bait, for the trap, even knowing that it's a trap, which we see that all the time in storytelling. Yeah, I know it's a trap, but I got to go in there anyway. And you've got to show that courage in the face of what should be fear. And he goes and he confronts Vader. they're having a lightsaber battle. Luke's all, hey, I can use this laser sword. And Vader's like, yeah, well, I can too. And also, let me throw some of these other things at you telekinetically. And Luke's like, wait a minute, that's not a thing. Is that a thing? Nobody told me that. So Yoda, dude, tell me I can throw things. So
yeah,
it was, I mean, he got his butt handed to him. And then we get that final moment on that antenna structure where Vader, rather than just killing him, he's trying to turn Luke.
Yeah.
And arguing, you know, we can team up. We can get rid of this Emperor guy and you and I can run things.
Yeah.
That's a pretty compelling argument. I mean, if you think things are being run badly, you try to change it. And if you can't, then you try to take over. So
especially because like he's already in the rebellion. He already knows how impossible it is or how impossible it seems.
This could solve all the problems.
Yeah. And if he had any confidence in himself and in him, like, you know, he could have tried to negotiate or anything. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm saying he should, but I think it was actually a compelling argument that Darth Vader made, but it's difficult to take such a compelling argument from someone without eyes. Like you can't see.
Well,
like, come on. Like it would have been, I do think it helps that he has a really interesting and compelling voice. Like his voice actor is amazing. Like to
James
a point,
James Earl Jones. Think, yep.
Thank you. Like to a point where he doesn't even seem evil to me because his voice is so cool.
You know, it's like, funny it's because I talked to someone else who is of a younger generation who watched Star Wars for the first time too. And a college student. And they're like, that is the most ridiculous voice ever. How can people take this seriously? Yeah.
I think it's a great voice.
I think so too. But then again, I'm biased. I grew up with it.
Yeah. I mean, sure. It's a bit overdone, but it fits the movie. You know what I mean? It might not fit like a real world scenario today, but in that movie, I think it's super effective and impressive.
You know, it's funny. You probably don't know this. The rest of our listeners have been hearing the story for ages, but the guy who played Darth Vader, a guy named David Prowse, a British actor, didn't know that they weren't using his voice until he was in the theater watching the movie.
Really?
Yeah. And he was he was pissed. He's like, what is this nonsense? Mm-hmm. But his voice wouldn't have worked. Like if you watch the footage of him talking, it doesn't command that presence. And all due respect to David Prowse, I think the voice works better this way. But he's like, I'm in this movie. It's one of the most famous movies of all time. You can't see my face. You can't hear my voice. Like, what am I?
Yeah.
What am I doing here? And then there's a moment in Return of the Jedi that adds insult to injury, but we'll get to that later because I don't want to spoil that. But remember that we talked about this and we'll come back to that. And you'll think it's the reality of it's heartbreaking for the actor, but that's aside from the story. So we're on this thing and Luke he's going to die if he doesn't join. Like you talk about a compelling argument. Here's another aspect. Oh, and if you don't, you're dead.
Exactly.
He could die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, clearly he gets saved but he can't have expected this because
no.
This ridiculous drop that he just decided to take. Yeah. And it's interesting that because I feel like in that situation, he can't see all the consequences and he can't see everything. So he must have made this decision more out of.
Yeah, he knew it was suicide. But that's also the thing, too, is it feels to me like this was yet another emotionally impulsive move by Luke. It was the right one, but it was very much spiteful.
Yeah.
And no. I know that I don't have choices here. This is the only choice. So I'm going to die rather than take it. And it's heroic, but it's also like, I can't fault someone for considering, well, how about I join him? We get rid of the Emperor. I fix some things. I get rid of him because he's still a bad guy. And then the good guys win.
Yeah.
And that gives Luke power. Yeah. But if the good guys win, whoever their politician is going to come to power anyway. There will be a good guy in a leadership role. Yeah. And if Luke's being offered that, take it.
Yeah. Like I did feel it was a lot of this idea of the lost son being reconnected with a father who was never there for him. He's like, well, screw you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not joining you.
Yeah.
I do feel there was a lot of emotion in this decision rather than heroics, but obviously also emotional heroics. And I think
it was heroic.
He just gets rescued. He always gets rescued.
Well, yeah. Luke, I tell you, it's one of those things where he gets rescued and rescued and rescued and rescued until the end when he actually like fixes things. Like it's like he has so many second chances.
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
But yeah, I do feel like that was the part that was definitely ruined, especially because a lot of the time I'm really not a person who is bothered by spoilers most of the time, because yeah. I'm usually more interested in how things come to be anyway. Like I'm not someone who's really interested in plot enough to be super into like, oh, the surprise. That's not why I watch movies. But in this case, it's sort of because it is so short and because you don't really see Darth Vader's face. And then Luke does this sort of overacting thing. It was like, yeah, that didn't have much of an impact on me, and it should have. And it was a bit sad, but still.
Yeah. And so David in the chat room pointed out another good point about Luke not joining Vader is Vader killed Ben.
Yes.
Luke had to watch it. So, okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
But it was a fair fight. I think the thing that he destroyed Alderaan is worse.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I just think that that's another reason why Luke wouldn't have joined Vader, because Vader killed this most important man in Luke's life that Luke knew for a whole 18 hours.
Yeah,
screw Alderaan. I mean, I met this guy on this one day and took a car trip with him, and then someone chopped him in half. Now my entire life is PTSD. Like, but okay, I get it. I'm making fun of it. Come on. Don't send me hate mail. I
do that.
Yeah. No.
Send me hate mail.
I have a mute button here. I don't know which button it is, but I'll find it. Dang it. All right. So, so Luke decides no, death is better than this, and he gets rescued.
Leia.
Yeah. And then, Vader calls out to him in the Force, and Luke hears it, and he's like, Father, and then he's like, thinks about it, and then he focuses on Ben instead. And then, we get the medical frigate. Luke gets his hand put back. And
that was easy.
Yeah, I mean, talk about some good medical technology. He gets his hand chopped off, and like in the theater as a kid, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to die. Like he's dead. Just
he at least can't be a Jedi anymore.
But no, what's he going to do? How is he going to send text messages?
You thought that.
With your nose? Like, I mean, it doesn't work. Cell phone. But in the 80s? Yeah, I guess not. I was thinking ahead. See,
I
was a smart kid.
You were an innovator.
I was. Mm-hmm. So I was using the Force. So, anything else? I mean, that basically wraps it up. So at the end of the movie, looking back on it, when you've got that scene and Luke and Leia are looking out of the medical frigate, Han is in carbonite, taken by a bounty hunter, Boba the Fett, a cult classic character in Star Wars. We'll talk a little bit more about him when we get to Return of the Jedi. Huh?
I did not. I know the name, but I didn't realize that was the one.
Yep, that's the one. So if you've heard the name, that's where that came from. And there's a whole thing about that character that we'll talk about next episode, because that's kind of an interesting thing, too, is I want to get your opinion on the psychology of why people are so drawn to that character. Hmm. And we'll talk about that next episode when you will have seen more of that character and can have a more informed opinion. Because there's like a whole sub fandom of Star Wars that has just really hyper focused on that.
He's
so you've
famous,
got that
famous character.
Yeah, very much so. So
I
you've
even
got
know
that.
Him, then,
yeah, and you knew the name and you didn't even know who or what. That's how big a thing he is. So you've got that last scene with Luke and Leia. Things are all kind of wrapped up, as it were. Han may or may not be dead. He's been captured by a bounty hunter. He's being taken back to Jabba the Hutt. Vader is apparently Luke's father. We don't know whether that's true or not. I mean, we know now, but in theory, we don't know.
Yeah.
The bad guys won. The rebels are flying off to somewhere. And that's it. Wait, 3 more years for the next movie.
Three
years. There were 3 years in between each of those. Yeah, it was rough, especially as a kid. Yeah.
That is a long time for kids.
And again, especially keep in mind at this point in time, not only did we not really have sequels, trilogies were unheard of, and we didn't have cliffhangers when we did have sequels to things. Mm-hmm. So to have a theatrical release with a cliffhanger, multiple cliffhangers like that, and then, you know, you got to wait 3 years, which as a kid, keep in mind, so I was 6 when that came out. That's 50% of my lifespan at that time. I have to wait to find out what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah, that's intense. It's 3 years is a lot. Like I thought Lord of the Rings 1 year, that was 1 year, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was 1 year. It was a lot. And I was like 18, 19 around that age. And yeah, 3 years for a kid is massive. Intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts? Like as you're watching that and then the movie's ending, you're looking back at the movie.
Well, I am predisposed to liking middle parts of series. So I love middle parts because I do think that usually middle parts focus on the characters more than on the plot. Because in the first, you have to set it up. And in the last, you have to finish it and bring it all together. Mm-hmm. But in the middle, you sort of have some time for character development and for hanging out with the characters and learning things. And I think it did this really well. And I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay.
I especially enjoyed, thinking more deeply about the characters. I do think, again, that I would have liked to actually see those dynamics developed a little more deeply with a little bit more of an emotional impact, because I feel like the everything about Han and Leia came partly from my head. Like I had to think about it a lot and it didn't grab me in the moment so much. And like, there wasn't like a tearjerker or anything. And I like a good tearjerker, but there wasn't. Even that moment when he almost dies, there's still a distance. There's still a wall between the audience and the movie for me. But I did enjoy it.
Part of that, I think, is also, again, the audience. It's supposed to be family friendly. It's supposed to be able to hold the attention of children as well as adults.
Yeah.
So if you go too deep into...
There are Disney movies who have more emotional depth and make me cry more.
Ooh, those are fighting words.
No, like, not...
How dare you?
It has depth. It just doesn't show it that much.
I'm kidding.
It just, it sort of takes a step back and lets you interpret everything.
Is that bad, though?
No, it's not bad, but it's like I said earlier, you know, it hinders complete immersion in the story. You know what I mean? It's like you can get really swept away in a story in either the plot or what the characters are doing. And you're so engrossed in it that you don't really realize that your emotions aren't your own anymore, that you're crying or laughing or like just being, you're in the moment. And I didn't have that yet with Star Wars, but again, I didn't expect to because it was made in the 70s and that's how our 80s now. Not sure.
1980s when it was released. It was made in probably like 79.
So yeah, like this is sort of like more of a minor complaint because again, I expected this and it did, and I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would, especially in the second watching actually.
Yeah.
And the battles are still too long, but.
But please tell me you will at least admit that the battle between Luke and Vader told a story of sorts.
Yeah.
Like it. Okay.
And that didn't feel too long for me. Either.
Good. Okay.
I like that one. Because it's a personal thing and it's, it leads up to the big revelation and they have dialogue in between. That works for me as a fight scene. Yeah.
All right. Well, in that case, we're going to wrap it up. Next up, episode 6, Return of the Jedi. This is the end of the trilogy. This is what was supposed to have been the final chapter in Star Wars. Little did we know at the time that that wouldn't be the case, but this is going to wrap up this trilogy. It is supposed to tie up the loose plot threads and you know, pick up where we left off with the cliffhanger. You, fortunately, don't have to wait 3 years to watch it. Modern technology.
Yeah.
And you have not seen it yet. So to clarify for people who are maybe just hopping into the stream or something, you have only seen A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and then you did see Phantom Menace in theaters but didn't really have any context for anything. You went because friends were going and you were kind of like, you know, you went along with them. Yeah, you're a teenager. Yeah. Okay. So this is going to be your first viewing of Return of the Jedi. I can't wait.
Yay.
I can't wait.
I really want to watch it.
Yeah, and I'd like to watch it again. I really like that one.
Oh.
So that's going to do it for this episode of The Story Crucible. Thank you for watching. If you're watching in Twitch or you would like to watch in Twitch, go to twitch.tv/CineFan, CineFan. We will have these videos posted to the YouTube channel once that is set up. So stay tuned for that. The audio for this is being released in podcast form as part of the Random Chatter Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. And trying to think, is there anything I'm forgetting there? I think that's about it.
No, you're forgetting that people should go to your Twitch channel, and because you're an affiliate now, they can subscribe.
They can. You can help support the channel. In fact, so here's the thing. I hate kind of plugging the whole subscriber thing too much because I feel like, you know, weird about it, but I am trying to kind of do this as a part-time job. But here's the thing. For those who don't know, you can subscribe for free. If you have Amazon Prime, you can link your Amazon Prime membership to your Twitch account because Amazon owns Twitch. And then they allow you to subscribe to one streamer a month for free. Each month, you just have to go in and choose what streamer that is. So if you've done that, you can go to twitch.amazon.com/Prime. After you do that, then you can subscribe to me and it doesn't cost you anything. And yet it still helps support the channel.
Easy.
Yeah, it's really not difficult at all. The setup's really easy. Twitch.amazon.com/Prime. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Lila, thank you for hanging out and bringing us these insights. And you guys out there, we want to know what you think about it, too. If you have not watched or listened to the previous episodes, you should go do that now. And send us your feedback. Let us know what you think. RandomChatter.com/Discord. There is a Story Crucible channel there, or you can email us, StoryCrucible@randomchatter.com. That's it. Until next time, may the force be with you and take care.
Bye-bye.